Enjoy the film.
You want butter on your popcorn?
The theater will be ready in a second.
How was your week?
How was my week?
Where? What do you mean? You've been with us.
We have not left each other's side.
Well, sure, but I mean, like the listeners don't know.
You're just trying to draw out
I'm
a story.
I'm trying to be a good host. All right, trying to be a good host.
Now, at this point in the podcast, you decided to try to be a good host.
No time like the present, huh?
Well, that's true, but yeah, this week has been a busy one,
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Boys, we.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the factories.
Yeah.
And then, kind of rebuilding the factory district.
From scratch.
Out of goo, yeah.
Yeah, it appears that after the one factory sort of erupted with goo, as we mentioned, goo-rupted, I believe Greg coined that term.
You're welcome.
The goo just seemed to keep coming, and the town is just sort of
floating.
Yeah,
it's floating.
The town itself is floating on goo at this point.
The town is an island now,
mm-hmm.
and it is floating atop goo.
So I guess not rebuilding much, but kind of uncovering the factories so that they could float to the surface.
Yeah. The lizard people have been kind enough to dive down and salvage what they could. They've been bringing up coat racks and coat hangers and coats.
The lizard people did come over from the pile.
Mm-hmm.
I mean I think the goo reached them, so they were like, let's figure out where this all came from.
Yeah.
They have a United Lizard People Nations now, so they decided to send us relief, mm-hmm.
And
which was
thanks
really great.
To them, they've been sending over helicopter after helicopter, just the two helicopters.
Yeah, they passed.
But
some
one right after the other.
They brought us Cheez-Its. Name drop.
We're not sponsored by Cheez-Its.
This isn't a Cheez-It podcast.
This isn't a Cheez-It podcast. But hey, Cheez-It.
No.
It could be.
Now's your chance.
And they started bringing up people too, which has been nice.
In addition to all the coat racks and stuff, they did bring up human people from the town.
Yeah, mostly everybody, actually.
Pretty much everyone from the town is back, or at least their clone form is.
Right.
But the coat racks too, though.
Mm-hmm.
Coat
mm-hmm.
racks and people. One coat rack for every person, at least.
I'd say two or three. Yeah.
It was mandated, actually.
Mm, yes. Yes, indeed.
Steve is mayor of the town now.
Yeah, he's the de facto. Is that the word I'm looking for? He's the de facto
sure.
mayor
slash owner.
Yeah,
we were able to show him the Steve Clemation proclamation that we found.
That's right,
underneath the theater.
Mm-hmm. We did do that.
And you know what he said to that? He said, "I'm Steve."
And we said, "That's yeah, you are, bud.
You're so right, Steve. You're so right." Pat him on the back and sent him on his way.
So our town is now run by a clone of Steve.
And we're a floating city now. So things are pretty good here in Timberdale.
Yeah.
Better than they've been in a while, I'd say.
We're just trying to keep the town afloat now.
But yeah, things are pretty normal now.
Things are pretty normal.
Normal
we
enough.
Still haven't found Tommy. We haven't found Tommy.
Yeah, he seemed to have fled town.
If he didn't blow up.
I mean, yeah, he was in the factory when it filled up with goo and goo-rupted. I don't know why I'm using that word.
Yeah, you're getting a lot of traction out of that word there, Kyle.
It's not even in the dictionary yet, but I'm...
really using it. Is it possible that... Could that get added to the dictionary, Henry?
Anything's possible with the dictionaries.
Oh my God. I could be famous.
We don't credit the words that are in there.
Oh, just think. Goo-rupted. Eruption of goo. Greg. Yeah.
Well, most of them are attributed to God, so it would be kind of redundant, honestly.
I forgot that your father gets words for the dictionary from God directly.
Oh boy. Now that's a pretty big name drop right there.
Yeah, that's a pretty big name drop.
The Lord Almighty? Yeah. But yeah, besides the fact that, as we said, it's been a very busy week, not much really went on. So should we just like start the podcast?
Well, I don't see what else. I mean,
we didn't have any listener suggestions this week because somebody's slacking. Miguelon.
Miguelon Verantoro, our first listener suggestion giver.
This one's for you.
Yes,
we're gonna need another.
We dedicate this episode to Miguelon, whose name I'm sure I'm still pronouncing horribly wrong.
Schwimm, we're coming for you next.
Ooh, open Schwimm.
But welcome to Breakroom at the Cineplex. My name is Kyle McClinsky.
My name is Greg Basil.
I'm Henry Prime Harrison.
Yes, you are. We haven't found your clone either.
Yeah, still got to throw that one in there because, he slipped away. There's a lot of goo involved, and he just kind of slipped through our fingers.
He slipped and slid.
Literally. Mm-hmm. But, that's welcome to Break Room at the Cineplex.
This week we watched a movie, and we're going to review it.
Yes, we did.
As you've come to expect.
Mm-hmm. So this movie came out in 1994, just in the wake of Jurassic
Forrest
Park.
Forrest Gump. Oh.
Yes, and Forrest Gump.
It's
and
sort of
movie
a hybrid.
We was kind of a combination of the two.
Yeah.
Because this was in a time when a lot of smaller production companies were trying to capitalize on the dinosaur craze that seemed to be going on in that one movie.
As well as the Tom Hanks renaissance of the time.
Yeah.
And so this is a little film called Jurassic Gump.
Oh. Yes, it is.
Yeah. Boy, from the title, you wouldn't think much of this movie, but give it a chance, guys. Give it a chance. I know we did.
Yeah, goodness.
We sure did.
Because we just had nothing better to do. We were floating around.
Like, listen, we're pretty much freaking quarantined at this point because we can't get off the freaking island.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're getting all of our supplies from the lizard folk.
Cheez-Its.
And that's it. And they were very kind enough to give us a copy of this movie because we were
right.
Like, hey.
They dropped a bunch of movies that they didn't want anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Most of them being this one. Just yeah, many just copies of this film.
It was 9 copies of Jurassic Gump, 109 Dalmatians, and that old Scrooge McDuck Christmas classic. I don't remember the name of it. Doesn't matter.
I believe that was the Scrooge McFuck, which was the...
Oh, that's right. It was the porno.
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now,
which we did watch, but we're not going to review
watch,
that one.
We
did watch.
But we'll review that maybe some other time.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
So anyway, we got ourselves, we reserved a copy of Jurassic Gump. Mm-hmm. They're in high demand now. And we sat ourselves down and just, we watched this one.
We decided to watch this one.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we'll just hop right into it. I mean,
let's do it.
Let's just preface this with.
Let's get on and do it.
We open on the Louisiana Bayou.
Circa 63 million BC.
63 million years ago.
Oh, you're talking about the prologue.
Oh, yeah. Where we get the scene of... there's just dinosaurs
going marching
through the Louisiana
around.
Bayou. boom, credit sequence. Jurassic Gump. we get the main cast names, Tom Hanks. We get
Sam Neill comes in.
Mm-hmm. Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, it seems like they got a lot of the people from Jurassic Park.
But also Tom Hanks.
And they added Tom Hanks from Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
Like, why did they do this movie? Never mind. We'll get back to that. Don't they have enough?
So,
it'll become clear. Yeah.
And then as this credit sequence is finally ending, we get a mosquito flying onto the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And it lands on it's a weird looking, like, snout aardvark looking thing. I don't even know.
Some prehistoric something.
Some prehistoric son of a bitch.
Jurassic jerk.
And it lands on this thing. And then a hand slaps it and kills the mosquito.
A human hand.
We pan up to Tom Hanks in a loincloth. and he is, I mean, they did his makeup something silly here, where he looks a little bit like a Neanderthal.
Yeah, he's just a
looking
little
Neanderthal.
They clearly wanted to make sure you could still tell it was Tom Hanks. They didn't go too far on the
right. They did nothing with the face.
There's nothing on his face,
but the body though.
Yeah.
And he says, come on, James, which is the name of this creature, mm-hmm. which is, I guess, his pet. And they start to walk into the tree line.
Yeah.
And then it fades to black,
mm-hmm.
opens back up and says, present day.
And they walk, and both Tom Hanks and this aardvark walk out of the tree line.
And as they step out of the tree line, we kind of zoom out and we see that this forest has been transplanted into a giant scientific facility.
Right.
They come out of the tree line. They are greeted by a handful of scientists who are like, welcome to present day. We have brought you back to life.
They're walking out of a tree but it's actually just cryogenic tubes that they've made to look like a jungle.
Right, to ease their transition back into being alive, you know.
Yeah.
So they're injecting with shots. Tom Hanks is kind of just grunting. He's like, whoo, whoo,
whoo. Until that they slap a patch on his neck, and then they're like, this is a translator patch. It's really far in the future. They slap him with a translator patch.
Right. It looks like a little nicotine patch. They just put it on his skin, and he starts speaking perfect, eloquent English.
Uh-huh. He's like, forsooth, what hath yon science man? And they reprogram it. They're like, okay, that's a bit
too... Yeah, the scientist has like a little walkie communicator that he's turning dials on. And
he's like, oh, it's set to 17th century. We gotta bring that a little bit more
modern. That
brings
modern
it up.
That.
He's like... Well, tarnation. And nope. And
regional.
Like,
regional.
Where am I? Where am I right now? And they're like, there we go. And they put the box down. They're like, listen, you're in present day now. All right.
Also known as you'd know it as the future.
And he's like, where was I before? And they're like, oh, well, that was past present day.
This is now the year 2175.
So when they say 1993 present day, what they really mean to say is the year 2175. They were just making this movie for the future.
Because it says present day, but it's present day in 2100 something.
Well, yeah.
It makes sense to me.
I just think they should have specified in the little subtitle.
What year it was. Oh, that would have made sense.
They did it
that
verbally. Made it made sense later on.
We got there.
It kind of threw everyone for a loop there.
You didn't even need any words there. You could have just had a fade up, and then you could have just had this conversation without the misleading title card.
Exactly. With the title card there, it said present day. I was thinking they meant 2020.
Oh, you thought this year?
Any year that it's in.
That's what I assumed. Now, you see, that's what I think I think every single movie should be updated. Now, this is just a Greg point here, all right?
Mm-hmm. Buckle up.
I think that every single movie should be that has a present day title card should be updated every single year. That way, it's not false advertising. We could sue, all right? Indiana Jones.
Uh-huh.
It goes from in The Last Crusade. It goes from him as a kid goes to present day. He gets punched in the face on that frickin' barge or whatever. We could sue Indiana Jones.
And you could take that to a museum, all right? So Tom Hanks is in this lab,
uh-huh.
and he's walking around picking up beakers, looking at them funny, like he's like,
what's going on?
And they're trying to explain to him, like, where he is, that he is now a subject. He's going to be entertainment for crowds of people.
Yeah, and they're trying to explain to him, okay, so this is what... So. In this day and age, we have things called zoos.
So we were like, why don't we just make a quick buck?
Yeah.
And just,
project, like, we come into it thinking, wow, they've made this great scientific leap forward by bringing this guy back. This is just to pay the bills. This is just to keep the lights on. They're like, let's bring back someone from the past while we work on our more important experiments.
Right. Yeah. And at that point, a big bell rings and they're like, oh, it's lunchtime. I don't get paid to, you know, during lunch. So I'm going to go take a break. And they all
break,
step out of the lab.
Union break.
Tom Hanks is left there.
And Tom Hanks is left there with James. Tom Hanks looks to James and he's like, James, this is insane. What about all of our friends? And James kind of gives him this look. Like,
And he's like, oh, I should get you one of these patches. So he goes over and he finds where they got the patch from and sticks it on his aardvark. And the aardvark speaks perfect English.
Perfect English, saying, please, you didn't have any friends.
And he's like, wow, James, I didn't know you were so sassy. But and he's like, there's a lot you don't know about me. And he snaps his little paw.
You know, whatever aardvarks have. This is the voice of Sam Neill, just to be clear.
Yes. Sam Neill, in his native Australian accent.
He's an Australian aardvark with a lot of sass. A lot of
Louisiana.
Attitude. Yes.
Yeah, goodness. This was just a money grab all across the board, not just in the movie plot, but the production team as well was just...
So we cut to the scientists on lunch, and they're all drinking Pepsi, and we can very clearly see it.
With the logos facing out.
And they're talking about Pepsi.
Right. So they take big long sips and they go, ah, man, this Pepsi's pretty good, isn't it? And instead of like talking around a water cooler, they're talking around a soda machine.
They're talking around a soda machine.
And they're kind of gossiping. Like, You see that fucking idiot in there? He doesn't even know what year it is.
He doesn't even know what Pepsi is.
He doesn't even know about the Pepsi Coca-Cola war of 2085.
Which Pepsi won?
Now there's only Pepsi.
And so a half hour passes and they pack back into the lab. You know, they're all got their cans of Pepsi.
Yeah, they got the cans of Pepsi.
Put them on the dash or on the controls. They all have cup holders, Pepsi brand cup holders. And so they start to kind of ask questions. They're like, so, you know, what's 9 plus 9? And he's like, what does that mean?
What is 9?
They're all just joking around with him. Like, do you know what an ocelot is? And he's like, I don't, what are you talking about? And they're just like, get along with this guy.
Stupid is as stupid does. Am I right?
You can tell a lot about a guy by his loincloth.
And they're like, I think he's ready. I think we can put him up in the main exhibit now.
We've confirmed he's entertaining to interact with.
We've had our fun.
Let's have the audience have their fun.
So they push a button, and the platform of his like facility starts to raise, and he's lifted into the air, and it's like an open top exhibit. There's like big glass walls that enclose him in, and there's just crowds of people.
So many people taking pictures.
Gawking at him, asking him math questions.
Throwing chocolates at him.
And he's like, what is this? And he eats it. And he's like, this is amazing. This is the best I've ever had. So people are just chucking food. He's catching it in his mouth. He's having a good time. Tom Hanks is amazing in this scene.
He does an amazing job. Like
he caught every piece of food.
And so we see kind of this day sort of passes and night eventually falls and the crowd eventually disperses. And we kind of get a view of the rest of the zoo as they clear out. And we see that like they've brought back all sorts of historical figures. William Shakespeare's hanging out in an exhibit. Joan of Arc's there.
George Washington is there.
Also people from like our time,
Russell
because
Crow.
That's the past. Like Russell Crowe's there. And so we kind of see that this zoo has been occupied by a bunch of confused people from the past.
Yeah.
But you know, Tom Hanks is the newest exhibit, the most interesting one.
This movie is called Jurassic Gump, all right? We all know what we were in for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We know what comes next.
So, yeah, night sets on the facility, and they lower all the enclosures back into the ground.
All the enclosures go down
so that the scientists can have their fun again, because they like to have fun.
Yeah,
they're assholes.
Yeah, so they're just, you know, knocking on the glass, making funny faces at him,
tapping their Pepsi against the glass.
Yeah, they're and it's at this moment Tom Hanks is like, man, just I had so much fun today, not even these scientists can get me down. And the scientists are like, man, he's no fun. Let's go. You know, taunt
J. Edgar Hoover.
So
they all filter out.
Yeah.
And Tom Hanks opens one of his eyes.
Yeah. He falls asleep. We get some sort of passage of time. All the lights go out in the facility. And he opens one of his eyes because he hears a tapping on his glass. And he's like, oh, are the scientists back? Can I dance for chocolate or whatever? And and he opens his eye. And there's William Shakespeare on the outside of his enclosure. And he's like, mm-hmm. Hey, caveman guy. We're all breaking out of here. You arrived at just the right time. We've been planning an escape, all of us historical figures. Verily. We're gonna... we got a whole breakout plan tonight. Are you in or are you out?
And he's like, listen, I don't know where we are, how to operate in this world, and they give me chocolate here.
I don't know what numbers are.
But I know the chocolate tastes good. Yeah. So he's like, but hey, since I'm kind of just, you know, I'm at zero right now, let's just do whatever, because that base level here, let's just go do, I'll come with you guys. Yes, I'll go. James, let's go. And James kind of looks up at him and he's like, not before my morning coffee.
Which doesn't make sense, because like, they didn't even know what chocolate was until this morning. Was there a scene that we got deleted where they gave the aardvark coffee?
Yeah, we don't know. We need to watch the special features. We got to watch the special features. There has to be deleted scenes.
There must
be. This whole movie was just deleted scenes.
It feels like it.
So anyway, Shakespeare's like, listen, that Pepsi over there, you see it? You see how there's a crack right in the glass, right by that Pepsi? I need you to poke your foot through there and knock the Pepsi over. And he's like, can I use my hand? He's like, it's not the right size.
It's got to be your foot.
Verily, quoth, bequeathus.
Bequeathus.
And he starts to poke his foot through. And it almost reaches. His toe is like almost touching the Pepsi. Mm-hmm. And he's like straining. He's like, I can't reach it. And he's like, and Shakespeare says, unto you, I must tell you that you must stretch your foot quite a bit much farther. And he does. He strains more and his toe taps it. And the Pepsi just wiggles and resets. It doesn't quite fall over. And he's like, I can't reach it. He says, use your hand then. And he reaches his hand through and instantly knocks the Pepsi over onto the controls. Mm-hmm. Everything shuts down.
Everything
Red
shuts
lights
down.
Start to blare.
Mm-hmm. All of the cut, like the glass walls start to rise. The whole platforms rise back up into the zoo, and then the glass walls
come down,
and all of these historic figures are now loose.
Make a break.
They're
for
loose
it.
In the zoo.
They're running around. Abe Lincoln sets fire to a trash can, starts rolling it down the way.
Russell Crowe rips the scientists in half.
Yeah. Harriet Tubman tackles one of them, starts punching them.
I mean, we met Tom Hanks. He's only been there a day. Who knows how long these other historical figures have been trapped?
Yeah.
And mocked and have chocolate thrown at them. What kind of life is that?
What kind of life is chocolate being thrown at you? You never know what you're going to get. So they start running around. Tom Hanks and James, they start running down the way after William Shakespeare. Shakespeare's like, come hither, come yon door, escape route I see before me. Damn it.
And he's like holding the door open, and he's like, we got iambic pentena, leave this place. And so they all just run out the exit and down this corridor. And he's like, listen, this is the auxiliary exit. I don't think many of the scientists... And right at that moment, the scientists round the corner. Mm-hmm. And they have little tranquilizer guns. And they say, you didn't think you'd get away this easily, did you? And it's at this point we realize this isn't scientists at all. These are safari wilderness survival guides, all right? These are these are people who have come from the Australian outback to hunt.
To hunt people through time. They're hired to go through time, hunt down people, and bring them back to the zoo. It's them that we... I just thought of a really cool title they could have used. Uh-huh. Time Zoo.
What a missed opportunity.
Jurassic Gump.
Jurassic Gump.
I think they were trying too hard to capitalize on two known beloved properties that they missed out on a much better title.
It doesn't hit either of the marks, but they really tried.
They tried their darndest.
So the time hunters are like, you best get running then.
Yeah, we'll give you a head start.
And so they turn the other direction and start running back the way they came.
And the hunters start counting backwards from 100 because they said they'd give them a head start. Mm-hmm.
They're
nothing
their eyes.
if not men of their word.
And and James and Shakespeare and Tom Hanks' character, who has he had a name yet?
They just call him Caveman. I mean,
they just call him Caveman.
he knew enough to name his aardvark, but no one was around to name him. You know.
Aww. So Caveman, Shakespeare, and James, they're running down the way. They're taking turns. They're taking lefts. They're taking rights. You know, turns.
Both of them.
And they finally get to an exit, and another exit door.
Mm-hmm.
Caveman says, "Well, all right, let's go out this way. Let's go out this door." Shakespeare, what do you think? Shakespeare's like, "Yeah, sure, why not?" And so they all go out the door.
It was a really pointless exchange.
Yeah. They open up into an alleyway.
And right at this moment, the time hunters come through the exit too. And they're mm-hmm. like, "Guess we didn't give you enough time." And then they're like, and so they start, they're like, "No, we got to get out of here." And they fire the tranquilizers. And Shakespeare gets hit by one. And he mm-hmm. says, "Oof. No, oh, oh." He starts to fall asleep.
Sleep.
Says, "Run, caveman, run!" And so Tom Hanks starts to book it down the street.
He rounds a corner, and he ends up face to face with John F. Kennedy, who's crouched behind a dumpster.
Yeah, John F. Kennedy. He's crouched behind the dumpster. And he's like, "This here is my place to hide. You can hide somewhere else. Damn it!"
And caveman is like, "Listen, they just got Shakespeare. They're coming. They're right behind me. Can I please hide behind this dumpster with you?"
And Kennedy says, "Ask not if you can hide in this spot, but ask where else you can hide besides this spot."
And shoves him.
And he pushes him out and kind of tugs the dumpster toward like an alleyway and like closes it off. So he's like there. And the caveman is shut out. And he's like, God damn it, Kennedy!" And he starts running down the street. He doesn't know his name actually. He doesn't say that, but no. the aardvark said James says that because he knows everything. And say that he rounds another corner and he's face to face with a hot dog vendor, and he's like, "You want double mustard on that?" And he's like, "No, I get." And he runs around to the other side of it and hides behind the hot dog cart.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, the hunters. We hear them from around the corner moving the dumpster out of the way, and Kennedy's mm-hmm. kind of shrieking in terror, and then another shot.
Oh, God.
Pew, pew. And then they come slowly, bootsteps coming from around. Mm-hmm. And he looks up on the counter, and there's like a little container of water, and each step of the boot, it shakes a little bit.
Though you can see clump. The ripples.
Clump.
It's pretty tense. Clump.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And just at that moment, an arm reaches out and grabs Caveman, and he turns, and it's not the hunters. It's Marilyn Monroe. And she's like, "Come with me if you want to live."
And so the time hunter orders a hot dog. and they're in like a little secret alleyway behind the mm-hmm. hot dog vendor.
And Marilyn Monroe, she's saying to...
Caveman.
She's saying to Caveman, she's like, "I've been hiding here for weeks. I escaped, well, weeks ago. We've got a place. You, quick, come with me. We've got a place underground. We're living in the tunnels." And so she's like, "Come on."
So we see
Caveman.
They sprint off down the street. She runs over a sewer grate and it blows up her dress. And she's like, "Ooh-hoo!" And then she picks up the grate and they climb down inside the sewers.
Classic. And down there we see a bunch of other historical characters.
They have built a full city underground.
Yeah, a whole city of just people throughout time. Mm-hmm. You got Mozart. You got Jesus.
Mozart's thumb wrestling with Beethoven. Jesus is the referee.
You got Genghis Khan
playing street hockey with Mahatma
Alexander
Gandhi.
Alexander the Great. Yeah.
It is a who's who of historic figures,
and they're all just down there, and they welcome Caveman, and Caveman's walking around, and he's like, James, this is amazing. What do you make of this? And James is like, James is like, I don't know, but it beats working.
He says, "Don't talk to me till I've had my first martini of the night."
I think it's beer o'clock.
I need my weekend water.
It's nice, except for the smell.
I'm all nose over here.
He lists off a bunch of zingers, most of which don't make sense.
He lists off like 6 or 7 zingers real
quick. Yeah, a good 6 or 7. He starts into a nice tight 5.
Marilyn is like, "Well, let me show you around the joint then." And mm-hmm. she's kind of introducing him to you know, figures of history.
Mm-hmm. And she's saying, here's King George, Henry V, here's Charlemagne. We're all here because we've all escaped from the zoo. We've all escaped from the time zoo.
It's like, did you do the Pepsi thing? And he's like, yeah. She's like, yeah, that's how we all got out.
Shakespeare told me to. She's like, yeah, Shakespeare told us all to do that.
He keeps getting us out and getting captured on the way.
He almost has made it here.
That sorry idiot.
But listen, she says. She says, it's so lucky you came to us on this night, because tonight was the night we're planning to tear down that zoo. We're doing a full uprising. We're taking it apart. It happened to coincide with an escape night, but those happen at least 2 or 3 times a week at this point.
Yeah. So it was bound to, they were bound to happen on the same night.
It's
eventually.
Not as much of a coincidence as it might seem on first glance.
Yeah. Trust me, this is clever writing.
Are you in?
and he's like, sure, let's do it. So they start going through a plan on breaking back into the zoo, mm-hmm. destroying most of the machines, but keeping the hunter's time machine, keeping that operational so that they can send everyone back.
Right.
And they're like, okay, this is the plan. Well, they go through the plan.
Yeah, they got all the, they got blueprints that have been drawn up by Leonardo da Vinci.
We got Julius Caesar here. He's going to help us, you know, execute. You know, no pun intended. And Julius Caesar says, what? And he says, never mind.
Never mind. Oh, you'll find out.
Just don't, stab us in the back later. All right. Anyway.
And so they go out. They're going through the streets. They're bobbing and weaving through traffic. They're getting yelled at by
motorists.
Yeah, there's a taxi driver who's like, "Hey, Einstein, get out of the road!" And it's actually Einstein.
He's like, "I didn't MC you there,
squared.
You square."
So they continue onward towards the zoo. they've built a battering ram to get through the front gates. And that's where the initial push happens. That's where a lot of the activity is, right. Though there's a second team that's going to be sneaking in the back when they're breaking in through the front.
Right. As a distraction. So they kind of wheel up the battering ram, and we mm-hmm. can see up on the battlements of this zoo, there's scientists posted out with tranquilizers and time hunters too.
Mm-hmm.
And they spot them. They're like, down there. And kind of people start to crowd the walls on the edge. And down at the bottom by the battering ram, Julius Caesar steps forward, and he's like, "Surrender now! We need to destroy this facility and go back to where we came from." And they start to slowly wheel forward the battering ram, and the time hunters and the scientists are kind of looking at each other like, "What? Like what? This is no way!" Mm-hmm. And they start to throw rocks and stuff down at them. This is like a full on mm-hmm. storming the castle sequence.
Yeah.
Right.
So they're pushing. They're like, "We gotta push this thing," and they're just like getting pelted with rocks and beakers and vials,
cans of Pepsi,
full cans of Pepsi. I mean, this is intense. And slowly they wheel it up and they start to ram. And as this first ram happens and it like slowly like splinters the door just a little bit, we cut to the secondary team, mm-hmm. and they're crawling through the sewers down below the castle. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a zoo, but it really does look like a castle.
It got a castle vibe to it. They were definitely doing some sort of theme for this zoo.
So they're climbing through the sewers.
Mm-hmm.
And Marilyn Monroe's leading this team. And they pop, there's like this grating that she's able to lift up and pop out below the, and like on the bottom floor of the castle. She's like, follow me.
She peeks her head up and she's got like war paint on her face, like sort of like camouflage, but she climbs all the way out. She's still in that bright white dress. It's not really
classic
doing much. So they climb up into this room and they're in the, they're in this like utility area with all these like, big cables and stuff and electrical boxes. And Marilyn's like, this is the main power supply room. We're going to shut down all the lights, all the alarms, and we're going to use the cover of darkness to go in and execute this plan as we talked about it before.
And right then, Genghis Khan takes a big, huge axe and chops all of the cords, all of the wires and the cords.
In one swing.
In one swing, he's like, wah! Got you covered.
As all the power goes out.
And we cut to the control room of where all the scientists are. Mm-hmm. Well, there are a bunch of scientists there, and there's Samuel L. Jackson.
He says, "Who spilled the Pepsi? Who's got the Pepsi on the controls?" And they're like, "No, nobody. Nobody."
This happens
Pepsi.
Most nights. Yeah.
And he's like, "Pepsi check. Everyone, hold up your Pepsis." And they all hold them up, and they're all upright and full. And then he's like, "Okay." Well, what just happened then?
So at this point, the auxiliary lights have come on, but they're this sort of like red, like pulsing glow, which gives this whole sequence a pretty intense, like almost creepy vibe as they're going through these long, dark hallways, trying to get to the mainframe where they can shut down the entire scientific facility.
Mm-hmm.
And we cut back to the main entrance with the battering ram. And it's like a good, it's starting to bend this door. This door is starting to break. And they're like, ram it again. Bam. Rocks, Pepsi cans, falling still.
Staplers.
And there's bodies littered behind them. But they've gotten all the way to the door and they're ramming it. And he's like, one more push. And the door crashes open and they flood through. They just start yelling and screaming.
Like and, all of these historic figures. It looks like if you were to just flip book through a textbook. It just looks like all of that.
Pharaohs from ancient Egypt. Mm-hmm. There's Al Capone is there, but he's like in his later years where he's all messed up with syphilis.
Martin Luther King Jr.
And
they are beating the shit out of these scientists.
Yeah. They're flooding in there. They're throwing punches. They're knocking them on their socks.
And like it's a really fun sort of sequence. I mean, like it's an intense, it's played seriously. This is not played as some sort of comedic sequence, but you're seeing like medieval characters using broadswords, you know, using all the weapons from their time. And you see like Billy the Kid swinging around his six shooter. You got, you know, this sort of collision of all these eras.
There's this really sad violin ballad that's playing as it's going. It's all in slow motion, very artsy.
Right.
So we cut back to the secondary team. And they're running up a flight of stairs, and they get to the top of it, and they're like, this is the main control room where we can release all the other the subjects here, but we got to be careful, because, and right at that moment, the door bursts open, and time hunters start pouring in.
Yeah.
And they're all saying, like, g'day, hey there, that's not a
knife.
You
think we let you just wander through there, mate?
And they just start launching tranquilizer darts.
Yeah, they just start shooting tranquilizers at them all. Like, they don't even stop. And so that piano ballad comes back, or that violin ballad comes back in. They're falling. No. Oh. Big impact. As they hit the ground. And at that moment, the first team comes in, and they are witnessing this through a glass panel. All they can do is watch this happen through a glass wall. And they're all like, no, why is this happening? And then the hunters turn toward them. And right at that moment, they're like, no, don't do that. Because they see Tom Hanks with his hand on a big handle. And he says, caveman in. It says, caveman does. And he pulls it. And that whole room ignites in fire. and it burns all of these Time Hunters alive. Mm-hmm. At that moment too, the glass starts to raise up, and you know, in this aftermath, they're kind of just ushering people to safety.
Uh-huh.
All the historical figures sort of end up in this one room, and they're like, "All right, the plan went pretty well. The only problem is we incinerated all of the Time Hunters, therefore all of the time hunting equipment, the time travel gadgetry. It looks like we've taken down the zoo, but I think we're all stuck here."
And James pipes in. He says, "Well, that's a Monday for ya."
And they're like, "Great.
thanks. Thanks. At Aardvark.
What a time to be alive, am I right?"
And so basically all these historic figures are like, we've accomplished destroying the zoo, but we need to go and we need to integrate into society and we need to live out the rest of our lives here in the 22nd century.
And we get a slow fade out and then a fade back in. It says present day again. we get Tom Hanks. He's running a shrimp restaurant. It's called Jurassic Bubba Gump Shrimp.
Which isn't even subtle.
It's on the nose. And he's talking to a film crew. He's talking to a film crew and he's like, So that's my story.
I'm gonna sell you the movie rights to it. My name, I've chosen the name Gump. I remember I came from a forest. Use that information as you will.
As you will.
And write a movie about me.
And then it fades out again.
It fades out again. And we kind of get these little vignettes where we see some of the historic figures, you know, sort of like where they ended up in society. You know, mm-hmm. Shakespeare's working right. as a librarian.
Yeah.
There's, right. It says Attila the Hun now runs a bakery. and he calls himself Attila the Bun Maker.
Yeah.
George Washington works in a lumberyard.
Mm-hmm.
Julius Caesar now runs a gym. And that's, I mean, then and the that, credits
and,
roll.
And we see all of those little vignettes. We see where all these people are over the credits, right? We're watching that over the credits.
Right. Right. That was Jurassic Gump.
Ooh.
Which should have been called Time Zoo. If only we had been in charge of the title.
Yeah, if only we could choose what these movies were called, that would... Boy.
So should we get to ratings?
I suppose so.
Yeah.
That is how this podcast works.
6. I'll go right into it. I'll give it a 6.
I'm going to give it a 6, I think.
This movie was so forced. It felt like they didn't know what they were doing. They got a lot of huge name actors, and I feel like they just, I don't know, it felt self-indulging in every sense of the word.
Oh, yeah.
8 out of 10.
Well.
All right. Because, yeah, here's the thing with this movie. We talked about it feeling like some sort of cash grab because they wanted to capitalize on the popularity of Jurassic Park as well as the popularity of Forrest Gump. But at the same time, they crammed so many ideas into this and went so unnecessarily big with the concept.
So big, so fast.
Like, you could have just had Tom Hanks in a dinosaur zoo, but you had to get all these figures from history to what end?
Unless that Pepsi money was like an insane amount. I can't imagine they made much, all said and done. The movie flopped in theaters.
Oh, it flopped hard.
It did coin the term Pepsi check, though.
That is true. Right. That is where this came from. That is where that came from.
Mm-hmm.
Pepsi check. And everyone holds up their drink, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Classic.
We do that all the time here in Timberdale. And I assume elsewhere.
Well, it must be elsewhere.
So, we're now... Timberdale is an island... floating on a lake of goo.
It's really good that we got that Steve Claymation proclamation out of the underground before it was flooded with goo.
True.
That's
true.
A good point. That's a good point. And I hope that he's able to turn this town around because we seem to be floating
we're
in the wrong direction.
The wrong way.
Yeah, we're facing the wrong way. I hope he can turn us around. I Like, I don't know if he'd, like, get a paddle or something.
Yeah, I don't know how you'd begin to do that. But,
do you think we should put sails somewhere?
I don't know. I don't know how much we should, like, contribute to...
Yeah. Yeah, we've done enough.
Right. We got him into office. He owns the town now. He is a clone who can only say his own name.
Now it's his job to work for it.
Right. We can't coddle him.
No.
Yeah. We dug him out of a landfill, found his ownership of the deed to the entire city, saved him, his clone, from an exploding factory, and we flooded the town with goo.
What more does he want? Does he want us to find his original body?
Right.
What does he want from us?
And I guess we should maybe figure out where Tommy went. He couldn't have gone far unless he had, I guess, a boat.
If he didn't get blowed up.
Yeah. Or we can just let that be and say, hopefully he's gone forever and he'll take his evil schemes elsewhere.
That sounds good.
You know what? I think... As great as that would be, I think we haven't seen the last of old Tommy the South.
Kind of wish we had.
Me too. Here's hoping.
Well, if you would like to submit a film for us to review, you could do so via email at cineplexpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at cineplexpodcast.
All right. Well, this is Break Room at the Cineplex Boys, signing off.
I'm Kyle McClinsky.
I'm Greg Basil.
I'm Henry Prime Harrison.
We'll catch you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.